Hello, everyone, and welcome to CEO Cheat Sheet Podcast. Today, I greet you in 2024 with a new episode with a very interesting guest whose name is Rob Collins, who represents a company called 42 Interactive as co-founder and CEO. Hello, Rob. How are you doing today?
Hi, Volov. Thank you for inviting me. I'm very well. Thank you very much. Great to be here.
Awesome. Great to have you here. So what an amazing start of the year. I enjoyed to learn a little bit more about the company. I already know that it's connected to the software development and consultancy. So please share.
Yeah, sure. So 42 Interactive came around in 2017. I'd been working previously for a mobile app development house that got sold onto IBM. I decided I didn't want to go and work for IBM. So I set up a separate business, not 42 Interactive at the time, and then realized how difficult it was to do on my own and found a couple of other co-founders and started 42 Interactive. So yeah, basically we're a design and development custom software digital agency. So we build digital ecosystems, which may include websites, apps, digital integrations, that sort of stuff.
Nice. So anyone who wants to build something like in their business, digital transformation, as they call it, right? They call right to you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, interesting you say digital transformation because we started, as I said, like nearly 7 years ago, and we started as a digital transformation agency. And then all the big guys decided that they were digital transformation agencies. And so we looked to differentiate ourselves again. But I think in summary, we are a digital agency. We don't do any marketing. We are purely design and development of digital technology. So I think that's the difference. But I think most people understand what a digital agency is. And I think sometimes digital transformation or creative technology or other things that come out can confuse people as to what you actually do.
Absolutely. I can tell like my team all the time, someone mentions like digital transformation or digital agency. They're like, what are we talking about? There might be marketing software. It's clearly that you reside in the software niche in the first place. Got it. And it's interesting that you mentioned that the offer from IBM, and this is, I think, how the big corporate world can give a good head start, right? Supply the experience and then someone can escape. But you also mentioned this is very challenging part. I mean, the route. And I'm curious, like, what was your personal goals then and now when you would do like a quick retrospective analysis?
My personal goals were, I've been involved in and around technology pre-iPhone. So I wanted to be involved in technology. Also in earlier years, I had worked for big corporates as an employee and understood, let's call it, the red tape and processes that go with big corporates. I really wanted to do something that I had more control of. And also, I was aware that my energy and to be honest, my skills in design and skills in development only would go so far. My background is more business and operations rather than coding as such. So it was important to find other people who had the same desire and same motivation. And I'd much rather be part of a team that's going the place rather than try and control everything. So there's pros and cons to both sides, but that was my motivation at that time. The motivation now, you know, we're fortunate enough to have grown over the last 7 years. We've got a team in Sydney. We have a team, my business partner is Indonesian, so we have a team of around 20 in Indonesia. And we also have a person in Japan as well. So yeah, we've definitely grown, some of it purposely, some of it as a result of COVID. But the motivation is really to help businesses improve their efficiency, improve their technology and understand their problems and help. You know, technology is moving so fast, and I think with both improved user interfaces and improved technology, then you can help their businesses grow. And I get a lot of satisfaction on seeing that happen. And a lot of our clients we've had for 4, 5, 6 years plus, and I think that's testament to, you know, we really see the people we work with as partners, and I think they see us similar as well. So we don't really want to sort of, you know, build a website and run off. We do a lot of support and maintenance, a lot of QA, and also ensuring that we, you know, keep our partners up to speed of what's going on in the tech space.
Yeah, that's a lot of things, and thanks for sharing in deep. And I think the motivation that you shared, like original one, is very similar to many people who started their business. As if they started from the corporate world, it's very limiting, of course, because you have a designated role. But if you see the problems you can't physically solve because it's out of your responsibility, mm-hmm. there is not much you can do. I started as a software developer. I was like on a little bit different side of the fence. And I actually was motivated by the extremely inefficient operations and project management. It's not my field at all. And I was like, what's going on? The entire implementation plans, everything is so strongly connected to decision makers who doesn't have like a proper process in place. And this was like motivated me. And I draw similarities from what you shared. So far, I think I can assume that you are successful because what do you explain next in regards to being more partner, not like development runaway.
Yeah.
Because I think the real thing starts when you go production, like when you go with real users, real customers. Like development, it's like, I don't know, very early stage of the dating, as I would draw the association, right? It's like all good. But once you start living together, I mean, this would be probably the similarity to go production. Things get real. Yeah. And it's very easy to reveal how good you are. It's amazing that you do the extra mile, as I think drives the reputation and rapport with the client. And when it comes to business goals, what are your current business goals? Like, do you guys plan to expand?
We do have goals. I mean, our values are, you know, innovation, integrity, and empathy. And we really want to do the right thing by not only the people that work with us, but our clients and our partners as well. We've already sort of, I suppose, set on that goal. We made a call about 4 years ago to, we were obviously, you know, blockchain and NFTs were kind of coming hot then. And we actually made a call with the skills that we had in-house to go down the VR, the AR road at that point in time. So we've actually got a couple of products in virtual reality and they're joint ventures with partners where we've got a clinic, which is called the Innovate Pain Clinic, which is based here in Sydney in Edgecliff. And we're using virtual reality to help treat chronic pain. And then we also have a VR platform, which we started in the UK in the middle of COVID, which in essence is giving the opportunity for theatres to put their shows on a VR platform. They can decide whether they monetize it or not to basically bring their shows to a wider audience than at that time was possible with COVID restrictions. But now maybe people who can't travel or don't want to travel to various places. So I suppose in a nutshell, the professional services or the digital agency side is our main engine, our main bread and butter, but we are using skills and profits, to be honest, to build other products. And I think, you know, that there's pros and cons with that is that, you know, a few years ago, we don't lack ideas, and we actually probably had too many ideas, and we had to pull back and actually, you know, we had a couple of app ideas and a few other smaller businesses that we were sort of starting off, and we've actually had to pare back and focus. So I think that's one of the learnings over the last few years is that it's very easy to get distracted with the shiny stuff. You do have to sort of focus in, and that's a reason why both of our products, if you like, are in the virtual reality space.
That's interesting. Well, first of all, I got to start from the end. Like, you don't need to explain to me like how easy it's get attracted by the new tech and completely forgetting about running the business, because that's my problem. Startup craft agency is just pretty doing well. But the work layer is, since it's exploration, very experimental, it's just money wasting business. And even though it's money wasting, it feels like you're paying for entertainment and also sponsoring the same for engineers team. But yeah, I think it's what makes everyone's happy to be part of your company. If it's not just commercial, because it's more stricter, I bet, it has some room for creativity, people learn, and your overall company expertise grow. And VR, it's really awesome. I mean, we tried to tap into that tech. I mean, this is very niche, especially Unity and all of that stuff. We learn about the hardware, its limitations. It's pretty interesting. So I think there's a lot of software development agencies, but not much who can do VR properly. And I would say everyone who is watching that now, it's a good point. It's very, very hard to find good VR engineers, I can tell. We had so many clients, unfortunately, declined because we can't find, no matter how hard we want, it was impossible to hire. And right now, I think, back to this business goal, I think the external events started to impact the digital world significantly, like COVID, now it's AI. So everyone now is looking into AI. If you see like how much venture funding being reallocated, it's like when people say, oh, there's no money in the startups. No, there are a lot in AI startups. So like it was with the blockchain before.
Exactly.
And I think the ability to adapt quickly to what world demands is key to success. One more thing I just wanted to ask in regards to the running business from operation standpoint, what you like and what you hate the most in this business?
I don't hate anything. Dislike is perhaps maybe the word I would use. There's a few things I dislike in a good way and a bad way. I kind of dislike how quickly technology is moving, and that is a challenge for everyone. And when you're a technology business providing technology services, you have to invest in your team, in training. Even if you're not going to go down a particular tech path, at least understand it so you can decide whether it's right for you or wrong for you, or at least how it kind of fits. So yeah, the speed of things is something I dislike, because you've got to keep running. But you know, we do have training in our team, and people train regularly on new areas. And you mentioned AI. I mean, we have a few of our team members have been training in computer vision and voice and those kind of areas. And what else do I dislike? I dislike tenders. But maybe we'll come to that later. Yeah. But what I do like is sitting down with our partners and walking through, you know, their challenges and solutions, and being open and honest whether we can help them or we can't help them. It's a small world in Australia, and you know, if you say yes to anything, you're going to get found out. So, and I also like bringing in other partners. Like, for example, we're not a cybersecurity specialist. We know enough about it, but if there was someone that we're working with that required that, we have partners that are specialists in that area. Or if we need someone to do, you know, particular user research, you know, out in the field, we have partners that would kind of do that. So that's what I enjoy, I suppose, helping the digital technical community kind of work together. And we've had a lot of partnerships with other agencies and other people similar in our space, where we've kind of helped each other going forward. And I think the other thing that I really like is keeping the team interested, motivated, and just going back to what I was saying about the products, is that if we were just a website business or a CMS type business, I'm pretty sure our developers and our QAs and our project managers are going to get very bored very, very quickly. At least with other interesting projects, whether that be in VR or other stuff, they have the opportunity to, you know, learn more things. And also for us, it's a good thing, because then we can rotate the team through projects. And then if something happens, someone's sick, we then have coverage. So I think that's another thing I enjoy, in making sure that I'm across what each individual is looking for, where they want to go, why they want to go there, and kind of being a guide. So that's pretty enjoyable.
Yeah, this level of control helps you do the right things, I believe. Like, and I agree, like with the workload management you briefly mentioned, and things are not going as intended, you can actually display maybe a more more friendly approach to your team by putting them into this internal initiative instead of like keeping them on the bench or laying them off. And I think this kind of thing is very powerful. That's what I try to find excuse for my project when I see like expenses and I don't see enough sales. You know, balancing this, I was like, well, people learn new stuff, they are happier, and we still have them for many, many years. And it's easier for us than when the commercial project kicks in to put right people in the right place, right?
For sure.
And for the what you disliked, I just wanted to briefly mention that from my software development background, I would say community is very reckless. They are reckless. They see new shiny thing. They go there. They don't have a second thought. I was like I'm not going to do into too technical stuff, but there were one framework on the web. It was really nice, but boring as hell. It's Ember.js. It was like so good. I know a few big companies like LinkedIn is using it, and a few companies in Sydney that has a governmental and serious contracts. Not like smaller startups, is a really significant thing. But it's very, very boring, because they have opinionated approach, and developers just, they are I know, jumping on the wall and trying to get out. That's it. React, for example, is different, right? Like, there's a lot of interesting things that can easily break your business. But for them, it's very interesting. It's experimental. All right. So, yeah, we'll see how more businesses gets into AI, even not having much expertise, I believe. But doing this right is through the partnership, as you mentioned, it's very, very smart strategy, like not, you know, taking the project you can't, right, to implement, no matter how hard you want, but maintain the reputation. In this intro part of the section, I have one more question about like doing this business, having an interaction with the team. I believe it's very intense, like for any other guest we had here. Can you share some daily routines that help you manage this battery, entrepreneurial battery in your schedule?
I suppose the one thing I tend to do is I'm an early riser. So in general, I'm up early, and I don't want to call it admin, but the tasks that need doing, I try and do first thing in the morning before sort of the kids are up, and more importantly, before, you know, the phone starts ringing and demands come in either from partners or the team, because as soon as that, you know, whether it's 8:30 or 9 o'clock, as soon as that happens, then, you know, your focus or potential on the harder challenges that you need to solve kind of disappear. And I'm fortunate that, you know, my co-founder Danny is the opposite. He's a night owl, so it kind of works well. He's creative. That maybe creatives are more night owls, but he tackles the difficult problems at night. So, but the good thing is that we have partners or clients, we've done work out in the US and we've done stuff in the UK. So from that point of view, one of us is available to have a conversation with pretty much at any point of day, apart from maybe that midnight to 5 a.m. or 4 a.m. window. So that's kind of how I start the day. And then mostly in recent days, you know, I'm in the office in the city or in clients. Obviously, it's probably 3 days, maybe 4 days a week, but I'll try and maybe get a day at home where I can pick up my kids from school or maybe take a breather and go for a walk. I live up near the Parramatta River, so having a walk along the river by the water, you know, kind of clears the mind and clears the head, and you know, you can get on with nice. With other things. So
yeah, thanks, Sharon. Yeah, it's pretty interesting. I like how you guys cover like a huge amount of time with the very challenging time zones. I mean, it's very hard. I moved to Australia recently, and I didn't realize how hard it is to have business or clients in or team in Europe, Canada, US, and Australia. So it's crazy.
It's tough. I mean, that's why we're quite fortunate, because our team are mostly either here or in Indonesia. It's only a 3-hour time difference. It's not like, you know, the challenge you say with Europe, where, you know, you're talking 8 or 9 hours. It's a different challenge, and especially if people are only coming online in that part of the world at, say, 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon. You know, it's halfway through your day, or a lot's been done by then, or a lot needs deciding by then.
Yeah, we call it like a hole or socket, because many of us like work in the morning and in the evening, and it's not like super healthy. We're trying to just allocate people so they don't have these weird schedules, and we are getting there. We'll cover this in the next section, actually, which, by the way, is about the structure and tips and tricks you can offer a share to any listener, and touches the approach when you start the work, like from the quotation, how everything is registered, whether like software supports you in that journey, the actual progress tracking, a reporting which is connected to it, and like overall delivery management, as well as like accounting process and like invoicing, late payments. Maybe you can share some insights on that. I will be keen to learn myself. I would say an eternal problem. And finally, about automation, workload management, and maybe a little bit how AI helps.
There's a lot there.
Yeah, that's a lot. But don't worry, I'll guide you through. And it's actually pretty logical. Like when I created structure, it was like coming from naturally. You have a client, what are you going to start from, and how it ends, like down to maintenance. So let's start with quote generation interaction. Like, do you use any software process tools that you don't mind to share? Of course, we don't want to tap into your trade secrets.
Yes, I mean, the initial stage is obviously speaking to a potential client. A lot of the stuff that we do is through networking and events, and obviously, you know, we're members of CARB, but industry events, industry networking, and word of mouth. That's to be honest, where a lot of our let's call them leads come from. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there's, you know, the traditional tools, should we say, like, you know, LinkedIn and email marketing and social media and that sort of stuff. So we do have a couple of people internally that do our own marketing, and we use an external agency as well occasionally to do marketing for us. As I said before, although we're a digital agency, we don't do marketing for people. We'd rather stick with what we know we're good at. And then tools that we use, our CRM is, we've played with a couple of CRMs over the years. We've used ActiveCampaign, and more recently we've moved to Pipedrive. That's increased in its functionality and features over the last year or so. So that's the CRM we use. We have a couple of us, I mean, I'm doing sales here. We have a dedicated salesperson in Indonesia, and we have a sort of part-time salesperson in Japan. But in terms of the quotation, I mean, the first step is really having a call or a meeting or a sit down to try and understand what are we trying to solve. And we would normally, depends on the size of the project, the budget that they have, but we would normally start with something that we call a digital discovery process. So we'd sit down with the stakeholders to really flesh out what are they looking for, why are they looking to do it, and kind of, you know, come up with the pros and cons. What tech stack do they currently have? You know, do they have an in-house tech team? And try and understand all the pieces of the jigsaw before we then just kind of bat back, okay, well, this is an offer. Because some of the companies we work with will have legacy systems that are either global investments or national investments. And yes, we could rebuild it for them, but we know the best way in the world, they're not going to remove a subscription of a vendor that they've got on a global basis for multi-million dollars. So I suppose step one is we have to know what we're working with, and we have to know what challenge we're going to solve. Then once we've got all that information, we would then provide them back a report. And that report, to be honest, may well be, okay, these are our recommendations. Yes, we can help you, or no, we can't help you, and we recommend you find someone who is a specialist in this area, or we find, you know, or maybe we can help. Our CTO might be able to help consult or help with your team, or maybe our product manager can help with your process or something along those lines. It's not necessarily about design and tech always just ripping out what's there, because we really need to understand the, you know, the forward goals, because the tech stack that they're working on, they say, okay, we want a better design on our website, on our CMS. Depending on where they want to go in their roadmap, that CMS may not be the right solution for them 2 years down the line. And the last thing we want is us deliver a project and then we find out that, you know, that CMS or that version is being sunsetted, and then they've got to spend the whole money again redoing the whole thing. It's tears at bedtime if we go down that road.
I love that concise approach. I think I drawing similarities what we did in the past in the same approach. We called it blueprint. And I don't know if you guys do this mandatory, but we do not pick clients who don't want to do blueprint, because we found if the client is not understanding the value of analyzing things first before building, and we actually saving them a good amount of money, because you are not estimating ballpark of the entire product implementation. You do discovery, and it would, I realized, I think as anyone else, that when you do the proper development process, it's still going to be part of the process. You just hide this stage. So extracting it makes a lot of sense, and in the end would probably lead to fostering a good relationship with such a prospect, right?
Absolutely. That's definitely, I think, is the, when you've gone through the early years of you want to do everything for everyone, you may have to do everything for everyone, and then you can have the luxury of maybe being a bit more picky, shall we say.
Yeah.
You have to do that because, you know, a bit like, I don't want to harp on about tenders too much, but a bit like what you're saying is if the clients don't see the value and all they're looking for is a price, potentially, you know, they're tire kicking against one of your competitors, or they're using it as a leverage thing internally to justify something else. And I don't want that, demotivates not only the people in your team, but also everyone else around it, because, you know, they've put in a lot of work into an estimation and then it falls flat. Or so I agree 100% that investment of time, effort and potentially money from the client needs to happen in order for, you know, us to treat them seriously.
Yeah, that's also educative for them, I would say. Like if we speak about the new businesses, startups, I mean, we deal primarily with startups, of course. They come with so little background and want to just, let's go develop stuff. Mm. No, it's the wrong approach. You're just going to waste money. You don't have a strategy. You got to start from that. Anyway, I think this is a common ground. And you said you also using the software called Pipedrive. I've heard about it recently. Mm-hmm. I think they're getting hard on sponsoring stuff. I mean, the game on project management tools are getting very, very hot. I mean, I can tell from work there. We are rebuilding the strategies. Like, it's the battle to, you know, to dominate the market. And like ClickUp is probably the lead right now. Yeah. But anyway, for the pipe drive, do you guys also use it not just for sales and marketing, but do you also use it like to create the project there?
No,
just separated.
Just for sales, just for tracking sales pipelines, leads, contacts, that side of stuff. And you mentioned ClickUp. We actually use ClickUp. So we were an Atlassian user, probably like a lot of other tech companies, and developers love it. And I understand why they love it. But when you start to grow to the size that we are, it's not just developers. It's, you need to have visibility from a project point of view, timelines. And we looked at lots of products, you know, everything from Monday to Rike to, as you said, there's a million and ones out there. And we went down the ClickUp road. Now, we were Jira and Confluence for forever and a day, but, you know, ClickUp definitely over the last 2 years in terms of features, functionality, visibility, and just helping our planning is, I think we've made the right choice, at least for the moment. But we've always got one eye what's going on. I mean, there's a lot of tools coming to the market, and we would look at, you know, we continue to look at tools, not just from, you know, is there a cost benefit, but are they bringing in, you know, AI automations or other things that integrate better into our workflow process to make us more efficient, because we're trying to make our partners more efficient. So we also need to look at ourselves as well. So yeah, big advocate of ClickUp. I think I've done a really good job.
Yeah, they're doing a really great job. And even though they're our competitors, I would say kudos to them. They are one of the few companies that I observing for many years. And to be honest, as a developer, I hate Jira, and I know a lot of people who hate Jira, but I'll get to that point. What ClickUp is doing, in my opinion, is just invest money into tech. And this is the right thing. Like, Jira was dominating the market mainly because there's not much other tools that you can find. Like when Trello kicks in and similar newcomers, they were not reliable. They were like pretty weird. And I don't say people would really use it for real. I mean, the first system we went to was Asana, but Asana was lacking time tracking. We needed time tracking. We deal like with international company. You mentioned you have an office in Indonesia, and maybe people are getting there like in the one spot. Yep. Like in our case, people spread across the globe. It's like we don't have like a centralized office. There are some people getting together like 2-3 max, but there is not much. And Asana lacking the time tracking. We use HubStaff. Now we have two tools. Now people getting pissed and stressed when it comes to onboarding. And then it's not over. We have Slack as well. And we like, now we're losing the context of the conversation. By the time we started developing our own solution, ClickUp was like nowhere inside. It was like 2 weeks. And Asana was too damn expensive and still buggy and not worth it at all. I think it's probably the wrong time, I can retrospect, to start the product of our own. But up to date, I found there's something that ClickUp, even though it's pretty powerful software, lacks its simplicity. So I see a lot of people try ClickUp, stuck. They go to Academy, spend a lot of time and get frustrated, because this is something we try to do right now. Hopefully the time will allow that. We're developing an educational framework, because project management in the businesses up until like, I would say 50 people or like 15 teams is not that critically hard. And if it's properly educated people, and I can tell even in my company, and we are going in mildly in the second stage of like tracking and work execution, all that stuff. If it's not simple, then people waste a lot of energy for, I would say, efficient billable time, right? So they start doing like, oh, did I put the proper status, or did I move it to the right stage? Have I marked the task as completed? And so on and so forth, right?
Yeah. No, I agree. It can be not simple to use. And I think one thing that we realized a year or so ago is that we've got two people, one in production and one in our HR people operations, who are, let's call them ClickUp gurus. Mm-hmm. And they have set up, you know, various templates and that sort of stuff to make things as simple as possible for the team, because you don't want to be putting systems in that basically make your team less efficient, because it's what's the point? You know, at the same time, sometimes you do have to take them sometimes kicking and screaming and say, look, the thought is worse than doing it. And once they see it, and with the plugins and that sort of stuff that, you know, more and more every week are becoming available with ClickUp, it does make life as a business whole a lot easier. So yeah, it's, I suppose it's a bit compared to CRM world, it's a bit like Salesforce. There's a lot of complexity to it. And you know, you do need to have, should we say, a evangelist or an advocate that understands how ClickUp works and the new features coming, and understand there's a new AI feature and 3.0 came out, of how can these, new features and functions impact our business positively or negatively and the team's process.
Yeah, well, they do the right thing. Just covering this is a good example. Like you have a time tracking there. So do you use a time tracking?
Yeah, we do. We use Harvest.
Oh, you still so you have ClickUp, but you use Harvest. Yes,
and the reason for that is that a lot of our during that transition period, not all our projects had been moved over to ClickUp, and some of the legacy projects we have still were kind of in Harvest. But at this point in time, people have got used to, yes, ClickUp has its own time tracking, but in terms of, let's call it the financial reporting and invoicing and other functionality that Harvest has, that ClickUp still as yet does not have or is somewhat lacking. So that's why we continue to use a time tracking tool like Harvest.
Got it. Well, yeah, I think time tracking is just gives a good precision, like for anyone viewing that. Sometimes people think that, oh, time tracking, they're going to microcontrol me. Now, think of it of reporting. What's the alternative for the rest of your team to understand what you're up to, like what you're doing and what you did so far? It's going to be the alternative, people bugging you, and it's inefficient. I'm not going to talk about the communication inefficiencies and different types of communication, but time tracking, it's sort of like tool of reporting and helping everyone, including yourself. So I think it's great. And it's nice to know, of course, I'm going to say nice to know when ClickUp doesn't have something because it's still the competitor. I'm not going to like say a lot of good things for them. But I can say like, I like what you say because I also had another people saying the timesheets, like reporting they have, it's not detailed much. And even this Hub stuff or other counterparts, they did a much better job and doing this stuff. And on top of that, the financial aspect is actually was one of the strongest reason I didn't want to stop development of my own solution. Because I found like generating of the invoices and processing the invoices by my team is so challenging and can get really low, you know, get to the point when you don't have enough information automatically generated. So such as like, what's my gross margin for a specific project or for a specific person? It's impossible to do that with these software solutions because there are simply no tools like that. Like if you have, I don't know, internal rate and billable rate, and tie things together, generate invoice, match the transactions from the bank integration. I don't see anyone doing that. And we are doing like zero integration right now to, because I hate when accountants, it's another part, when they ask me like, hey, where this transaction goes, or like send me invoices. And if I put someone, then it's going to be mistakes and it's going to cost me. I don't know if you have this pain.
We do a little, but I mean, that's sometimes I think we're using too many systems, but then I think on the other side is that it's also better to have a fallback if someone backup puts in the wrong information. You can rescue, you know, the situation. And to be fair, you know, I'm sure that there's a way in ClickUp you could do financials, but it's probably very painful. Similar, you could use ClickUp as a CRM, but again, it's not as efficient as using a dedicated CRM tool. So I think, you know, it's a good tool. Yes, it's complex, but it does have its limitations.
Yeah, I mean, I think it sits pretty well for now. And especially with the additional, like I would say, very deep submerged layer that project management systems have right now, they're battling over AI landscape. Yep. So the AI that are offered by many tools except Raik was like very primitive to me. There was just copy pasting ChatGPT can do, and just, you know, you can do this in a task description. Yeah. Cool, I can do this as Grammarly, which is like browser extension. It's now everywhere where I have a text input. Easy. And no need to pay anything on top of that. And they have like trials. When it comes to the actual automation, something like more smart, you know, like can you ask AI to, well, can you solve that workload management stuff? You know, we have requirements from 25 projects for 150 people to be allocated. Can you offer me this automatic scheduling? No, nobody can do that. Even Raik, which is doing a really good advancement in scheduling, nobody can do that just yet. And I think we will see a really great few next years come for the solutions to pop up, and I think in ClickUp as well, that would do that, right? Because like, we don't want to do the routine kind of job, drag and drop in schedules. It's boring.
You're talking about sort of resource scheduling, are you?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't know. Do you guys use like workload management inside the ClickUp?
Yes, we do.
So I think it helps you plan properly. Yeah, that's amazing feature, I think. What I didn't find when I was starting it, because we also have, of course, I think every project management, good project management tool should have resource planning, is two things. First, I'm curious, how can you do the retrospective analysis? Like, can you compare like, hey, that was my schedule, it went this way. Like, can you do this analysis, you know, like match one thing on top of the other and see where the differences are?
I believe, I mean, I'd probably pass that to our head of production who kind of uses it a bit more, but I believe that you can look at time spent versus time estimate and on granular tasks. And I think with, you know, the subfolders and other things that they have, is, I mean, it depends on how granular you want to go. I mean, yeah, for some of our bigger projects, then obviously we need to be very, very granular.
Yeah.
But if it's just a, you know, it might be just a design item with four things or a development side of things. But yeah, you can report on, you know, and I suppose that goes back to sort of the traditional project management methodologies of agile and waterfall and making sure that, you know, you don't have an issue with your estimation or you don't have an issue with a particular team member or tech stack or whatever it may be that we should look at regularly, you know, how are projects going, how are things performing, because you need to look at the data to make sure that you're improving all the time.
Yeah, that's absolutely, I would say, pure gold here is having the data during decisions, because if you have a problem and you have a good amount of data, you can quickly at least find what's the root of the cause, right?
Yeah.
And then another thing was like planning and forecasting into the future. I think the only similar solution I found this feature was Productive.io. And you probably didn't hear about them because they're not so good at marketing, dumping millions. But they're really good at what they're doing. And they had such a thing that you also have in like, because it's critical. It's called placeholders, or you know that you need, let's say, senior Ruby on Rails engineer. This is one of the positions we recently closed. And you don't want to mess up with the schedule, but you want to provide estimation within the tool. So if you don't have that feature, you assign like task in the project that is not confirmed, but, and you can, so it calculates the cost of the task, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, you can generate the projection, what it would cost to the client. You need it, the business need it. If you don't want to do this manually, of course, and you mess up with the schedule, because once you assign the person, so calculation would work, they would now see unconfirmed tasks in their schedule and now it's messing up. So I don't know how you guys do that. I mean, or if you have had the problem like that.
I mean, generically, we manage workload, not just for current projects, but also, you know, annual leave, sick leave, public. So it's the whole schedule is kind of built in there. And then we would also manage, let's call it pre-signed work, also in ClickUp. So if we have a project that we talking to a client about and we think, you know, it's going to be 3 months in a team of X or Y, we can put that in as a tentative and actually assign the relevant team or relevant people to that project, starting from our best guess. And it's not difficult to then move it, but we won't necessarily put in the granular tasks. Mm-hmm. It'd be just like, you know, this project development, yeah, I don't know, 2 months or something like that. Ah. Because then that gives us visibility of, okay, do we need to hire more team members with this skill set? Do we need to think about finding another project that's, you know, going to help these three people, you know, be more billable? So that we need to have that visibility, and we use workload a lot to do that. Yes, you could use Harvest to do that, but we use ClickUp to do that, because then it's all in one place. It's easy to use.
All the people are there.
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice. Thanks for sharing. I mean, we are talking right now about a very advanced concept, and I think maybe for those people who just looking into that, thinking of the scheduling intricacies, like taking into account holidays, sick leaves, I mean, going into some advanced concepts like a planning fallacy and accounting the changes that might happen with the existing businesses is too much. But the idea here is that tools and pride processes can support a lot with, people to, you know, avoid these mistakes, prevent them. This is really nice. And a few more things I'm just curious, like, because we covered pretty much a lot, even though it's not that streamlined, the automations and AI. Let's start from the most interesting part, the AI. Like, do you use ClickUp AI and whether it really helps?
We use AI, we don't use ClickUp AI. And the reason we don't use ClickUp AI is that we tested it. And to be honest, their business model of subscription is that you have to have your whole team on the subscription if you want to use the AI tool. Now, if you only want one or two people to use the AI functionality, for example, you know, your project managers or whoever, you have to pay for the subscription for the whole team, which obviously from a, you know, the point you were making before, it's not as advanced of, you know, okay, give me the best scheduling for this type of project from the resources we have.
Not
it's more a ChatGPT type AI. And so ClickUp AI, no. Other AIs, yes.
That's interesting. If you're open to share about other AIs, I would leave that, and I would just mildly go into other aspect like automation. Like, do you use automations within your setup?
We do, both in our CRM. So, for example, if a deal is a particular size or in a particular vertical, maybe it's augmented reality instead of virtual reality, it will then be assigned to appropriate person to continue that conversation if the lead forms come in. Also as well, when it gets to a particular stage during that sales process, we would then probably bring in the production team so they're across what may be coming. And then automations in things like in ClickUp, in things like annual leave, I'll just use one example because we mentioned it before. There's a whole process behind that if a particular person asks for annual leave, there's a form that then gets assigned to their manager, which then, depending on if it's approved or not approved, will then go to flow down different paths to let the production team know that this leave has not been approved or has been approved or what's going on. So there's workflows in there as well that we use as well.
That's pretty interesting and a little bit complicated, like the forms and all that you mentioned. I mean, we did the simple, probably too simple feature for that, but it's like request time off, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And then there is a chart who sees that and some other top management team. But then, of course, the other top management team, they don't care until, I mean, the HR is doing. So it's as easy as that, like, yes, no. And to clarify whether it's yes or no, as you mentioned with the production team, they usually just ask their project manager. But I think we didn't get into scheduling like very tightly, because if someone just suddenly got sick or something like goes against what we have planned for month ahead, for example, now things get interesting. Like everyone now has a job because things start shifting, right? So this is, I think, something that yet to discover. And for AI, I think I would share that we also don't use anything for real except ChatGPT. ChatGPT is like your free, I don't know, support, like assistant. It fixes English completely. I will love Grammarly to use an AI, but when it comes to sales text or something, you know, working with international people, now our English sounds like we are, I don't know, all native, and it's pretty powerful when it comes to communication. And on top of that, you can also play with style. I mean, not like, hey, right, in frozen speech. Nobody would like that, right? Yeah, it would be crazy. But still, the level of customization is crazy.
It is. And I think if you think it's really only been in the market for 12, 14 months, how quickly and how fast it has improved, and businesses, well, at least our businesses have utilized that, let's call it that helper, that, you know, and not just from ideas or research, but you know, obviously there's DALL-E, you know, even a uncreative person like me can produce beautiful images. It's a very powerful tool, and I think people who are not at least understanding the power of AI to make them more efficient are missing a trick.
Yeah, absolutely right. It's not a replacer. I mean, a lot of, I would say, dystopian, paranoid thinking process was like around, AI is going to replace us. Well, if we allow that, if we will like work, meticulously towards that goal, it will. But nobody wants that. And people always put them first in front of the AI. And the AI is not that like brilliant, I would say. It's great in the right hands. But the text, for example, we are doing a website, right? And I was thinking like, I'm not a copywriter, and my language is specific because I'm too analytical at some point, using the words people don't purely understand. And, you know, a website must speak to everyone and be clear. So it's my job to make it that so. And AI just produced some weird stuff. And they love to use this word unveiled a lot of stuff. You can quickly, this is AI generated. Mm-hmm. And I got with another club member, Christopher Melotti, his sister, and they helped me drive that also towards the proper goal. I mean, I still generate a lot of stuff of AI, but I ended up redoing this. I just got the idea, like what are the options, but I have to change the word because it didn't really work. And for the rest, I think AI is still not there like to go that far in supporting. I mean, this Copilot.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very powerful. Yeah. But you know what my clients came to me first? They told me that, hey, buddy, just before you go do something wrong, you gotta reread our agreement and don't use AI. That's as simple as that. Yeah. Like, our legal team gonna chase you. Because the reality is there is no guarantees, unfortunately, right now, no matter what they say on the paper, that the data is not gonna be used, especially after the Samsung issue, right?
Yes.
So yes. You don't use it, or is that just curious?
I use ChatGPT, and we do, some of our team do use Copilot. We're a Microsoft partner, so we have played with Copilot.
That's nice.
You know, to your point, it does occasionally throw a weird spanner in the works, and some of our developers go, why is it throwing out that code? But yeah, it doesn't replace a good skilled developer. It just helps. And the same with a copywriter. You know, you're mentioning Chris before. I think it just helps us come up with ideas and topics and things maybe more easily than before. So yeah, it's definitely this point of replacement. And the Samsung thing, I mean, I think you have to be aware and out of your mind to be putting anything into ChatGPT that might be confidential or IP related. Otherwise, you're setting yourself up. So yeah, you know, and that's going to bring a very, I suppose, interesting future down the line, because I can really see blockchain technology and AI working together. You know, not just from a smart contracts point of view, but obviously there's a lot of deep fakes going out there with AI. If you've got blockchain tech behind it to go, you know, this is a genuine original photo, video, document, whatever you want to call it, then I really see those kind of, you know, down the line going hand in hand quite strongly in the future.
Actually, hit into the nail. The identity challenge is number one right now that blockchain tries to solve, because a part of the other more complicated stuff like decentralized access organization, or DAOs and other stuff, hopefully I'm not missing the abbreviature, but the idea is to have this decentralized control over the specific business or any other entity in the hands of those who are participants instead of one centralized corporate entity, is something a lot of businesses looking at. I hope that it's going to be married together, because they're both recent emerging technologies, and it really works well when it comes to the problem, like you mentioned, to separate the deepfake information. There's another tool, by the way, which is a little bit out of scope, but it's called Ground News. I'm not like affiliated. I just found how it's great that they show you like left, right, or center position of any news. I'm pretty sure they use AI to narrow down like where the source is coming from or how to weight specific news. But it helps just, I mean, it probably shows how the technology would battle the imbalances created by other technology.
Yeah. And I think, you know, that's the scary world of AI, if you like, is that there's obviously a lot of good that can come with, you know, artificial intelligence, but the scary world is definitely, let's call it, privacy and data issues. And especially when, you know, there's deep fakes out there that are kind of in the media, but I think, you know, some of the more perhaps scary stuff is AI replicating your voice from a couple of sentences. Yeah. And a lot of banking apps will have voice verification, and before you know it, or, you know, someone phones you and, you know, it sounds like your partner or your son or your child going, you know, please help me send money. So I think this is going to be a battle that is going to come quicker rather than slower and needs to be solved. And to me, blockchain seems to be the obvious answer, but yeah, let's wait and see.
Before we get in outro, I have just a few things. First of all, quick solution I found. If I have an unknown number calling me, I just keep silent. I don't say a thing until they start saying, and I'm thinking like, do I want to reply?
Yeah.
It's weird, right? Yeah. But on the other hand, I just thinking like, if I start replying right away, I'm giving away my position, especially if they know about something about me. I don't know anything about the caller. And if they do not represent themselves, I mean, to me, it's offense. Don't get me wrong, but it's not okay. We are not on the equal posture, right? And especially with this technology, when they actually can capture my voice, modify it, especially if I speak a lot in the very beginning, I think that that's something that at least banks should be aware of, that their voice recognition is not that dope functionality they used to think. And another thing is about tenders. I didn't forget about that. As RFPs and tenders, I mean, we had a huge pain with this. We tried to work with World Health Organization. We work with a lot of high profile companies such as like United Health Group, like through consultancy business, like Ernst & Young's, etc. But the RFPs and tenders, I just don't understand myself how it works, because they demand so like meticulous, disciplined execution, and they offer so small amount of money. I mean, I don't get it.
Yeah, I guess it's policy, and especially when you get into the world of government or government-esque, I can understand why they do it. But yeah, I mean, there's companies that are geared up to deal with those kind of things. And I think, you know, the frustration is sometimes that you are there to add numbers. They potentially already know who they're going to go with. And even though they say it's not about price, it's going to be about price. And, you know, being on the receiving end of, you know, maybe you're a successful winner and then they decide to change the scope, or they make so long to change, you know, to make the decision that the tech that you recommended 9 months before is now not the right tech to go down. I mean, you know, we said, you know, ChatGPT has only been out for 12, 14 months. You know, some government tenders take that long to decide. So, I'm not a big fan. I know there's companies that have popped up there to sort of help you with tenders. I'm waiting for one that wants to do no win, no fee, and then we might have a chat. But until that time, yeah, it's not something that I really have got the team set up or the energy to. So, kudos to all those guys that do, because, you know, those that put the effort in, you know, there may be some great rewards at the end. But, we're not really geared up to deal with that. Maybe in future, but not at this point in time.
Same thing. Totally agree. I mean, if someone would bear this load and do this due diligence, this conversation, weird one, yeah, absolutely, I would go into it. But, yeah, it's kind of very specific. That's the reason. I mean, we talked with Hood just to finalize this thought. We've been like, they told us a lot of good words, like, oh, the price is good, everything is good. Then they decided to change, and I think this is exactly this game. And the amount of efforts we already invested, being like, I would say, rather manipulated by their way of conversation, just put a last nail into the, into the grave of the dealing with the RFPs and tenders. So, but having the partners in that area works really well. I mean, if they tag that, the margins are crazy, but yeah, whatever. If it works, then it works. Cool. So I think we covered pretty much a lot. I have one question for outro, is about what you can tell us that is not presented on the LinkedIn about yourself.
So I have a big passion for the ocean. A lot of that is on LinkedIn, but I suppose something that's not on LinkedIn is that I'm actually a very average golfer. I try and get out, if I can, you know, every couple of weeks and play a round of golf and chase a ball around a field. So that's my hobby. I used to play a lot of sport when I was younger, a lot of rugby, and had a couple of knee reconstructions, so that's not an option anymore. So the golf course is the next best thing. So nice. That's what I like to do in my downtime. So yeah, maybe I should add that to LinkedIn.
That's pretty nice, sir. Thank you. And since you mentioned that, I'm getting into golf, just trying this out. And tomorrow I'll have this. For me, it's a little bit weird. Indoors thing. It's Playfair at Randwick. We'll see how it goes. But yeah, it's an interesting thing. Very interesting. So I think we covered everything. I really appreciate the depth of the knowledge you have shared and overall experience. One last thing just to share with viewers who might be inspired by how you guys treat the business, what you do, especially in VR space. I would highlight that. It's really cool. And I have to share that, yeah, of course, I watched your landing page. It's pretty awesome and shows like you are very focused in this area. How do people can best contact you or your sales team? Is it just, go to website and fill the form?
Yeah, go to the website and fill the form or send me an email. But yeah, get in touch and fill in a form and we'll make sure someone comes back to you in the right area. That's probably the best first step.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much. I'm delighted to have you as a guest. I wish you have a great week ahead and year ahead. See you in the next episodes.
Thank you very much. Thank you.